And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I want to tell you about a type of single-family rental house that you can buy that has the potential for creating massive equity for you. Massive equity, that translates into more wealth on your balance sheet. And if you're new to the program, you're listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We talk on this show about how to buy single-family houses, renovate those, stabilize them, get a renter into place, and create money five different ways. We talk about apartment investing as well. And I'm going to lean on one idiom today to go back to this house we're going to talk about. You've probably heard this before. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I want to talk about one of my favorite kinds of houses to buy and renovate, and that is the hoarder house. Yeah, you heard me. I like buying those things, the hoarder house. Here's what it looks like. You get a lead from somewhere, and you go to this house. You want to take a look. You want to get your budget together. Hey, let's figure out what we need to do to renovate this thing. And you'll walk in, and here's what it looks like. Here's what it smells like. There's a narrow path in front of you. Mounds of stuff on either side, boxes, dirty clothes, clean clothes, fast food bags, wrappers from hamburgers, Tupperware, unidentifiable things, dead and alive, who knows? You can't even see the walls. You just barely see the top of one of the windows, and that path leads into the next room, whatever that might be, and you can see already it's filled up as well. And you're struck by this strong odor, this stench. What is it, wet dog? Is it rat poison, mothballs, rotting food, a mix thereof? It may be. By the way, that smell, what you're smelling there, is actually the smell of money. Hoarder houses, they're fun. They're challenging. We'll talk about why. There are a couple of areas that make these unique when you buy these and get ready to do those renovations. And there's really some good money to be made there. When I opened the show talking about capturing equity, there's really a lot of upside in a hoarder house. And we're going to talk about hoarder houses today. Tomorrow, I want to talk about another type of house, so be sure to tune in. Another type of house I like to buy and renovate, and that is those older houses, say from the 50s, maybe before, pier and beam. I really like those pier and beam foundations with those old original hardwood floors that are buried under shag carpet or whatever else the prior owners have done. There's a lot of space to really go in and get creative. But that's tomorrow. Today, let's focus on those hoarder houses. How do you find them? What types of hoarders might we encounter? They're different. There are different hoarders out there. And we'll talk about some ways to maybe sweeten that offer if you're buying directly from the seller, right? Not using a realtor, not. You've gotten this lead yourself. And then I want to give you some caution around due diligence before you buy and things to think about. And we'll talk a little bit about renovations. But again, why target hoarder houses? Look, fewer buyers. They see those heaps of junk, they get that odor, that stench, they get scared. There's less competition for those. And that, like I said, there's a greater chance for equity capture. And that's where we create a lot of equity through the process by buying right. You're going to get this house at a discount just simply due to the condition and because there are fewer buyers. There's greater chance for equity capture. And among other things, there's the added cost that you will incur, which you can get done for a lot cheaper than you might think, which is the cost of hauling off a lot of junk. And that's what's going to turn off most other people. Now, how do you find a hoarder house? Let's talk about some other niches you might target as a real estate investor. If you're out there doing the search and the looking on your own, you might look at things like probate lists, affidavit of heirship filing. Somebody's died, right? Essentially, obituaries. I know investors that comb the obituaries. Let them season a little bit before you go knock on the door. That's a way to approach this, though. Foreclosures, pre-foreclosures, right? Go to the county clerk and get those filings. All of the aforementioned you can find at the county clerk. Divorce records. City violations, things like high grass or maybe other code issues, those are good places to go for leads. High equity leads. Not going to get into how to find those, but that's a type of lead out there. Absentee owner leads. I have a lot of properties where I am the absentee owner, and people are hammering me all the time with calls, texts, postcards, letters, they're viewing me as a potential seller, and they're sending me these contacts. So these are all things that people generally are doing out there in the investor sphere to try to find that next property. Now, what about hoarder houses? Well, they're not usually quite as explicit as the aforementioned lead types. In fact, that hoarder, I guess, profile tends to come with one of those, probably one of those headed for foreclosure, maybe as a result of a recent death. Generally, you're not gonna find these very clearly in that sense. You're not mailing hoarders. It's just not a known list out there. And generally, you won't find these in the MLS, the multiple listing service that agents use. And just out of curiosity, I am licensed. I'm here in Dallas-Fort Worth. If you're new to the program, I went to the North Texas Real Estate Information System. That's our MLS up here. And I looked 360 days. So basically went back a full year looking for all sales types with the term hoarder in the description. I found exactly three. So agents aren't normally putting these listings into the MLS. I'll tell you just quickly about what I did find. One of these was very near to me here in a very highly sought after area. Former hoarder house, it says. It doesn't really tell me much else. Closed with one day on the market. Second one's very interesting to me. This was a little bit farther out. Closed 3 days on the market. Here's the property description. It says, start the year right. Former hoarder house. Needs a lot of TLC. Serious investors only. Enter at your own risk. Absolutely. No children on the premises. Sold for just over $100,000. Good price. If you have any questions for me, you can send me an email to askandy@luinc.com. askandy@luinc.com. And on today's show, I'm talking about hoarder houses. What is a hoarder? That's somebody. We're going to talk about types of hoarders here in a minute, but generally, what are they doing? They're hoarding. They're collecting. They can't get rid of anything. And that leads to piles and piles and years of stuff and smells and odors, and you can't even see most of the house. What do you do with that? Well, it scares off a lot of people. And I was telling you that one place to go, you won't see a whole lot of information on the MLS, but you might look there. I did a dig. I dug into the MLS looking back a full year. There were exactly three listings that had closed there. The last one was interesting. It was under $70,000, closed one day on the market. The only instructions were hoarder property, do not enter. Conditions are not safe. And I've seen varying degrees of hoarder houses. I've bought a number of hoarder houses over the years. I've bought the worst of the worst, and I've bought some that were not too bad. We'll talk about the hoarder types here in just a minute, but how do you find them? Well, if MLS doesn't work, and you're not sure, there's not a lead list for hoarder houses, that doesn't exist, where do you go? I'll tell you, a lot of the ones that I've seen and bought have simply come from wholesalers, people that are doing the marketing. We talked in the prior, a little bit earlier, about other lead types. Well, they're marketing to those lead types, and just as a side effect of dealing with people that are headed for foreclosure or have inherited a house, they're tapping into these hoarder homes as well. So they're targeting other lead types. They just happen to also be hoarder type properties. For you, you can do that marketing. You might look just as you're driving down the road, signs that you can see outside of the house. The house is often not well kept. In fact, the front yard might be overgrown. It might be a veritable jungle. You may not be able to see the front of the house. Now, if you can see the front of the house, look closely at the windows. Often there's so much stuff in there, it's butting up against the blinds or the curtains. It's pushed to the side. You can see that. Window might even be broken, right? Curtains are pushed back. You can see into the house potentially. You know, check the backyard if you can swing down the alley or whatever there is. See what you see back there. I find that hoarders tend to expand outward in the back. They won't do it in the front because of the aforementioned code enforcement. Those code enforcement lists are a good place to go as well, by the way. And if you see this, what can you do? Well, you can go to the tax rolls, find the address of the owner. That's maybe that address. There are renters that move in that become hoarders, landlords. That's why you want to check your properties regularly or have somebody do that on your behalf. But send a letter or be brave and just go up and knock on the door. Knock on the door. Say, hey, you know, have a conversation. I know a guy that has very successfully been door knocking, I think, for a decade now. That's all he does. He doesn't do any other type of marketing. He just finds these houses and target, not hoarders necessarily, but targets them simply by knocking on the door and having that conversation. And we have picked up, my wife and I, over the years, just through word of mouth, And social media, we post pictures when we before and after when we buy and renovate these things, and people know what we do. And they know somebody that isn't. You would be surprised at the number of hoarders out there. And people know people that are like this, and they'll say, hey, my fill-in-the-blank relative very commonly. So let's talk about what types of hoarders you might encounter. What is a hoarder? You know, at its most basic, and this is a type of hoarder I've encountered, it's the collector. You know, and the just-in-casers, I'm going to call them the just-in-casers. They keep everything around the house just in case. I might need it. Sometimes these are older people that have maybe they went through the Depression or their parents did. And they were trained and taught to hold on to everything just in case. And they do. And they take it to the next level. Whereas those collectors, boy, they just love books. Books, coffee cups, souvenir t-shirts. Anything from any trip or any curio shop or garage sale that they've managed to go to, they collect this stuff. I bought one house from a guy. He was a collector. He had rock stuff. He had books. He had all kinds of little chemistry sets, fishing poles, things he never used. But the books were the interesting one. There were so many layers of books as we were vacating the stuff, clearing the stuff out of the house. I kept seeing the same book. It was like archaeology. The same book at different layers of the stuff. The guy clearly liked this book and lost it in the bottom layer. So he bought another one and lost it in the middle layer. So he bought another one and so on. That's how these things happen. Sentimentalists, that's another type of hoarder. These are akin to collectors, but it's typically things related to family. I find these and the collectors are the very most difficult to work with. They're very attached. And it's very challenging to get them out of that property because they don't want to leave all that stuff behind. All the family heirlooms and everything else. Shopaholics. They're not quite as bad as collectors. They're just addicted to things like QVC, if that's even still around, the sundry shopping channels. They're not collecting anything in particular. They're just buying those deals because they're great deals. It's a steal. I got to buy it now. It's late at night. I'm not doing anything else. Call it up or do it online. Boy, it's gotten so much easier to do online now, hasn't it? I have a dirty confession right here. If you ever see me out at a networking event, drinking water out of this tall blue plastic water bottle. I got that still unwrapped in the box, in the wrapping paper still that from the company it was shipped from a hoarder house we bought. Yeah, I'm using a water bottle. It was in great shape. There are a lot of good stuff, good things in that particular house. Shopaholics. Those houses generally don't have that bad smell. Now, sometimes these things mix and combine. And you move down, it gets a little worse, you get to the trash men. And these aren't trash men that take out the trash. In fact, they don't throw anything away. Beer cans, burger wrappers, french fry cups, dog food tin cans, cat food tin cans. It's all there and it's been there for a decade or longer. It's just trash. They're not really keeping anything of value. It's just trash. Can't bother to take it out. Maybe there's some other problems affiliated with this person that prevents them from taking care of business. The last one that I've seen, zookeepers, and these are animal hoarders. Here we're getting pretty bad. My wife is from a city on the coast, and I remember there was a house just down the road from her. They were animal hoarders, 100 dogs, 50 cats, other sundry animals. And of course, when you have that many of those type of animals, you got others coming in to visit as well. So plan on some major odor control. If you're going to buy one of these zookeeper houses, if you listen to the other radio host, Mike Harrison, he'll talk about Noah's Ark. He bought a house that was like this. Maybe not 100 dogs, but a lot of dogs and a lot of cats doing things in the attic and everywhere else. Good equity opportunity, but you have to be prepared to take some measures to countervene all the things that have been going on for years and years and possibly decades and decades. So you find this house, you find this hoarder. How do you get that house under contract? If you're working by yourself, doing this on your own, how do you make that offer and how do you sweeten that offer? Well, first and foremost, I'll tell you, we're going to talk about due diligence here in just a moment, but if you enter this house and it's as I described, you got a path going, I've been in these houses, path goes to the recliner in front of the TV, path goes from there to the bathroom, path goes from there to the bed, and that's it. That's all you have access to. How do you make an offer if you really can't see the overall condition of the house? Well, if you can't see it, assume you're going to replace it. And if you've been listening to this program for any length of time at all, you know that we follow the motto, best product, best price. We're going to replace all the flooring anyhow, and we're going to repaint and do all the fixtures. So, hey, we're going to head into a quick break. Let's take this back up on the other side. Stick around.
Got questions? Call Lifestyles Unlimited at 855-497-4335. The Real Estate Investor Radio Show continues next.
The rich get richer and the poor get poorer, not because that's the way it's set up, but because of the knowledge.
When put into action, knowledge is power. At Lifestyles Unlimited, we empower you to live the lifestyle of your dreams through passive real estate income. For over 30 years, our successful members share their knowledge through case studies, classes, and mentoring. Tap into the knowledge. Attend a free workshop online. Register now at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb, and we are talking today about buying one of those houses. You may have seen these cable TV shows, and I know on some of the streaming channels, streaming networks, you can find shows about hoarders as well. If you don't know what that is and maybe never watched one of those programs, give it a watch. Now, these may be some of the more extreme cases. I don't know. There are a lot of different cases out there. We talked about some of the different hoarder types, and I've seen every single one of these over the years and bought some of a variety of these, and they're often kind of mixed up. That collector probably has other problems with getting rid of trash as well. There's often a blend of these types of hoarders. And really, a hoarder house, it gives you a lot of opportunity. We looked at a couple of MLS listings. One was under 70K just a handful of months ago in this market where prices are way, way up. If I can get a house for 70K, I know I can do a lot with that. That's being priced as low as it is due to the condition and due to the fact that there are mounds of things and stuff and odors and everything else in that house. So if you can find one of these, do scrutinize it. Don't run the other way. Now, you want to have somebody by your side, perhaps, that has been through this process. And we have mentors at Lifestyles Unlimited that can help you with that. That's one of the reasons Lifestyles Unlimited exists, is to give you education around real estate investing and to put mentors at your side to help you through the process when you encounter these things, so that you can ask questions. If you get a little nervous, they can hold your hand. But there is a ton of opportunity in this very type of house. We talked about ways to find those. You're not going to typically explicitly find a hoarder house. It's usually a residual thing that goes along with some other problem, foreclosure, inherited house, and so on. Now, once you get that opportunity to go in, let's say you're doing a direct-to-seller deal. I've done a lot of these. You've got to make the offer. This is not a wholesale deal. The wholesaler's not already been there ahead of you to make that offer. This is you. And if you can't see the house on the interior, how do you know if you need to replace it? Again, with our motto, we're generally going in and doing full cosmetic anyhow. We know that. If I can't see it, I'm going to assume I have to replace it. For example, if there's so much stuff piled up in front of the water heater closet, I can't get to it, I'm going to budget for that. I'm going to assume they're not taking care of anything else in the house. Why do I think they would have replaced the water heater in the last 10 years when I can see there are 20 years worth of junk in front of that door? I'm going to budget that. If there's so much stuff that I can't get to the electrical panel in the master bedroom closet because it's an older house, I'm going to assume that it needs to be swapped out and I'm going to budget for it. That's how I protect myself. So you price these things into your offer. And here's the thing. When it comes to working with hoarders, a lot of hoarders, it's going to more often come down to the terms of the offer than the price. The price is going to be low. These people know the price is going to be low. They've been living in these conditions. They understand they have a problem. They know the price is going to be low. But if you can give them the right terms, and what do I mean by terms? I mean the things that you work, the non-price components of that offer. We've paid back taxes for people in the past. They felt socially obligated to, societally, I guess, obligated to get those property taxes paid that they hadn't paid. And they said, if you can pay the property taxes, the deal is yours. We'll sell you the house. Fine. We'll do that. It's priced in. What other terms? You get rid of the stuff. Don't call it stuff. Don't call it junk. Be respectful. But make it as easy on that seller as you can. Hey, look, I know this is hard for you. You know, this is years and decades of your life, but let me make it easy on you and I'll take care of everything. You don't have to sort through any of this, any of your belongings. I'll take care of that for you. I'll make sure some of this goes to a good charity, right? Put that in your terms. Offer to help them move. We moved an elderly woman out of a house that she'd been in forever, and it was piles and piles and piles of stuff. Helped her move into her retirement home. Helped with the heavier furniture, right? These are part of the terms. Special requests, perhaps. They may have special requests for certain items. For a lot of these folks, the hoarding, it is a sickness. Those sentimentalists, they have those heirlooms. Well, maybe you can get one or two of those to a family member in town. Hey, let's keep the family lineage alive. Let's get that grandfather clock down the road to your Aunt Bessie and keep it in the family. Those are things you can offer to sweeten the deal. It's typically not going to be the price. These people don't care about price. They've been throwing money out the window for years on the shopping channel and everywhere else. One interesting request I had to handle one time was drugs. I'm not talking about marijuana or any hard drugs. The person had a lot of medications and, again, felt obligated to dispose of them in the right way. I said, sure, let's get those together. I'll take those down to the police office, police station on your behalf. That made the seller happy. That is what it took. Very simple step. It's not the price. It's the terms. That is how you sweeten the offer. Now, again, back to the offer. We talked about, hey, I can't see anything. I don't know what the flooring looks like. I'm going to assume it's bad. You get the contract. Now you start to do that due diligence where you start to send out your vendors. Well, they don't have a magic wand that's going to help them get under that stuff either. They're going to run into the exact same problems that you did when vetting this property. So be prepared. You know, it's going to be more difficult. If you're used to taking down the standard bread and butter house that just needs some general loving, this is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit more difficult. We're still going to send out that inspector. I will always send out my home inspector. Just know that they may not see everything. They may not see anything, hardly at all. And they will not move anything, even in a normal situation. They don't move the couch to get to that outlet that's behind the couch to test that outlet. They're certainly not going to touch the stuff. Let them know that it's a hoarder house. They're going to come prepared with the proper bio gear, I suppose. And they're going to do what they can. They're going to check what they can. They'll still get up on the roof. Roof should be accessible. They're still going to go around the exterior. That's going to be accessible. Although, again, the yard and the bushes and trees may be overgrown. They're going to do what they can. And I want to get as much feedback as I can. They're going to see things that I probably didn't see. They're going to look at things. They're going to have experience because they've been in hoarder houses as well. A lot of the inspectors we use, that's what they do. They work with a lot of investors. They've seen this before. They've seen this before. They have that experience, and they can help us. Another inspector I like to send out every time is that foundation inspector. Same problem, right? May not be able to shoot the levels. That means that's where they take that, if you've ever seen it, the yellow box that has the cable coming out from it. That's how they figure out, that's how they measure the different levels of the house from the center point. Some parts of the house are up, some parts of the house are down. Here too, if there are mounds of things everywhere, they're going to get as close as they can. They may use that trail that's in the house. And not all hoarder houses are that bad. I've seen some where they have a lot of junk, but you still have access through the hallways and whatnot. Your foundation inspector will do what they can. A good company is going to be able to read other signs around the property as well. It's not just all about shooting the levels. They're going to be able to look at the exterior and see any kind of brick separation around doors, brick separation around windows. They're going to look at the sheetrock inside the house. Hopefully the ceiling's visible. Maybe the stuff isn't quite that high, but they're going to be able to read some of the other tales and signs that are in that house. Your roofer, get them out there, no problem. Other vendors, GC, they're going to have the same issues, but you can at least go ahead and start getting those bids as well. Hey, plan, general contractor, get out there. Let's plan on replacing everything. Tell me what you see. Get more eyes on that property. That is how you handle the due diligence in a hoarder house. And obviously the fact that these are hoarders tells you something. They're not generally taking care of their own lives, and they're not taking care of that property, at least at an organizational level. Well, they're probably not changing the AC filters regularly. Can't get to the AC closet, or maybe it's in the attic. If it is good news, you can hopefully get up there. Maybe you can't check that. Assume it's bad. Probably not watering the foundation. Probably not doing anything to benefit the house or the property in any way. So you're going to have to make a leap of faith here, and this is really where having a good mentor at your side can help guide you. Make sure you keep moving forward, because I'm telling you that when you get to the end of this process, you're going to find that you have gotten a ton of equity. I'm your host, Andy Webb, and we're talking about one of my favorite types of houses to buy and renovate, and I've done a number of these over the years, and that's the hoarder house. And we talked a little bit earlier about the different types of hoarders out there, how you find those homes, and some of the due diligence that you want to think about as you go in and you've made your offer, maybe you're under contract, you're now trying to figure out, is this something I want to close? You're doing that due diligence now. And we're going to talk about getting rid of the junk. You've now closed. This is the big thing that differentiates a hoarder house from most other types of investment houses that we're buying and fixing up. It's just piles and piles and layers and layers of stuff, maybe animals, and bad odors, things that we're going to have to address during renovation. But the junk is the big thing, the stuff, the things that these hoarders have collected over years and decades. That's an added cost. And that is something that you should have priced into your offer. But now we've closed, and now it's time to get rid of that stuff. At a minimum, if you think you're going to be going to look at a hoarder house, you need to know what is the cost of a 40-yard roll-off dumpster. What is the cost to have one of those filled and hauled off to the dump? What's a provider going to charge you? Because you're probably going to be filling up one of those, two of those. We did a hoarder house where I filled up three of those. You may have that much stuff. It's possible. Now, am I out there shoveling this stuff in? No, we're going to hire people to do that. Know what that cost is and price that in. If it's not that big of a hoarder house, that bad of a project, there are other options. You know, I mentioned the shopaholics. We bought a house from a shopaholic years ago, and this was a smaller, older house. And what they had done is converted the garage into living space, and then converted the former living room into this gigantic closet. They'd hung curtain rods everywhere to hang clothes on. And when we went into this thing, there were piles of clothes on the floor because there's no more room on the rods. Everything still had the price tags from Goodwill, from other places, from QVC, from these sundry shopping channels. Things like that are in good condition, you could sell them. That's an option. I'm not in the business of doing massive garage sales. But in this case, this is very close by. We stuck a for sale sign in the yard, made some extra cash off of this. A lot of other things we donated to charity. Very good way to go. And in fact, that may be part of the terms you've negotiated with that seller, is we're going to get as much of the good stuff that we can to your favorite charity. And there are charities out there that will come by, they'll send a big truck, and they'll haul this stuff off for you. If the furniture is indeed, when you dig down and get through those layers and you figure out that those couches are in good shape, reasonable shape, let's say, get them out to the driveway. These companies, these charities, they will pick that stuff up for free. Donate it. You know, the clothes may need to be in bags. They'll have their different parameters to figure out what those are. Maybe get somebody in there hourly to get that stuff prepared. Donate it. Free. We've put signs in the front yard that just say free with an arrow to the house. Boy, people come out of the woodwork. They like that free stuff. And it amazes me. The couple times we've done this, the things that people take away with them. Future orders? I don't know. Maybe so. The other thing I like to do is if there's a lot of metal in the house, I'll just put a quick ad up on Craigslist, and the scrappers, the junk guys or the metal guys, they'll come out. They'll haul all that stuff off for free because they're selling the scrap metal. You know, if you know the cycle of the bulk pickup for that neighborhood, if you set this stuff out on the curb or have somebody do that for you, those scrappers, they'll come by and they'll grab that stuff right off your curb. So there are ways to handle this or have somebody take care of that that maybe doesn't involve that bulk or that big roll-off dumpster. But generally, if you're like we were when we started, we're working full-time jobs. We're not out there handling this stuff, moving stuff to the curb. We're going to have our GC or somebody else do that for us. But there are lots of different ways to get rid of the junk. Now, with the renovations, we've had our due diligence. We sent our GC in. They told us what they could tell us. They gave us their bids based on market prices for construction materials and everything else. We're just going to assume we're doing the floors, etc. In fact, we're generally going to plan to hit everything from a cosmetic standpoint. That's just what we do at Lifestyles Unlimited. Best product, best price. That's going to get us the best renters that are going to move into this house. Doesn't matter that it was a hoarder house for 10, 20, 30 years. We put the best product out there at the best price. We're going to get the best people in there, and they're going to be paying us rent every month. That's where that equity capture that we're going to get from this thing, now plays in as cash flow as well. So again, we get to this house. There may be just a couple of pads to get around. Maybe it's not that bad, but we really can't see the floors. Assume they need to be replaced. If it's an older house with pier and beam flooring, pier and beam foundation, well, you know it's got a wood subfloor. If things seem to be damp in the house, you might want to budget a little extra to replace some of those beams, some of the subfloor. Can't see the bathtub? Assume it needs to be replaced. Can't see the kitchen? Hey, you got it. Assume it all needs to go, and you should plan to do that anyhow. You've priced all of that into your offer. Now it's time to execute. Right, have your GC go in and start doing this stuff. After the junk is out, obviously, that's the first thing. Get all this stuff out. Now get that foundation company back in there so they can properly evaluate the foundation. Now they can do that. Now they have access to the flooring. Maybe the carpet's already gone, even better. Get them back in there. If you need to do the foundation, take care of that. And then start to move forward with the rest of the house. Now going back to the zookeeper, if we had animal hoarders, and there were tons of animals in the house, pets, dogs, cats, gerbils, hamsters, what comes along with that, mice, rats. Bought a house where when we moved the couch out to the curb for the charity to come pick up, there was a squirrel cadaver halfway decayed. I don't know how this person was living with the odor, but it was there. So you're going to find in these zookeeper houses, these animal hoarders, that there's going to be an odor. Maybe there's been some flooding. Maybe there are chain smokers. Smells like the city dump. You're probably going to need to think about sealing the slab if it's a slab foundation, because the slab is porous. It's been absorbing. It's been absorbing over the decades, these odors. Very easy to do. Your contractor will know how to do this. Have them seal the slab. You may need to get rid of the sheetrock. If nothing else, you're gonna certainly apply a good application of Kills to cover up the odor before you paint. But you might need to get rid of the sheetrock, and you may even need to go down to the insulation. It depends on the degree to which these people have abused the house. By the way, if it's an older house that doesn't have grounded wiring, guess what? If you're pulling the sheetrock and the insulation out, great time to rewire. Now you've got a huge selling point. Go ahead and put in those new outlets that have the USB ports so your millennial renters can charge their devices. I put those in my own house. Great things. So good opportunity to go up and beyond with your renovation. Some people will go in with ozone machines. I bought one of those years ago. They do the job on smaller things. HVAC. Your AC and the ductwork. Again, if the odor's strong enough, you may need to think about replacing those. Again, you might budget that in at the time of the offer if you walk into the house and you just about faint due to the odor. But the rest, yeah, the rest is standard fare. What do we do when we go into any other house as investors at Lifestyles Unlimited? We're replacing the flooring. New carpets in the bedrooms, maybe vinyl plank throughout if I want to have something that's a little more friendly at the turn time. Tile in the wet areas, new appliances if the market demands in that area, stainless steel or black, new bath, new kitchen, fixtures, the faucets, everything else, brushed nickel, new light fixtures throughout, new ceiling fans, fresh paint, obviously. Like we said, you may need to kills that existing sheetrock if you didn't have to pull it all the way down. This is all standard cosmetic renovation. The only difference is we're a little bit blind at the start of the process because we can't see everything. And we won't know until we get all the stuff out and we budget accordingly. That's it. It's just that added layer of debris from years and years and decades of living. Whether that hoarder was a collector, one of those just-in-casers, a sentimentalist, a shopaholic. One of those trash men that just can't be bothered to take anything out to the curb. Or maybe the worst of them all, the zookeepers. No matter which type that is, once you get the stuff out and handle perhaps that odor, the rest is just your bread and butter renovation. By the way, I mentioned pictures a moment ago with respect to protesting those property taxes. It's also a great way to get a good story, get that good set of before pictures and that good set of after pictures. If you want to take down, if you liked the experience, I liked the experience of renovating that mess. If you liked that experience, it's a great way to relate a good story, show the amazing work you do, don't be shy on social media, and then get that next lead. Again, we talked early in the show. If you missed any prior part of the program, go to lifestylesunlimited.com, click on the radio button, and you can catch the earlier part of the show. We talked about how to find the order house. It's not like any other lead out there. And word of mouth, I find, is the best way to find these things. So to wrap this up, we've been talking today about renovating, buying and renovating a hoarder house. We're going to talk on tomorrow's show about buying and renovating those older homes. I really like those too. Very, very good upside as well. But if one of our Lifestyles Unlimited Realty team sends you a house to view that turns out to be a hoarder house, don't be scared. Don't be scared. Lean on the team. Lean on the team you've built. And understand there is a lot of opportunity under all that stuff. Like I said at the opening of the show, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And you can convert this into a ton of treasure. Use that education, lean on your mentors, and go get another great project under your belt. It's as easy as that. If you want to learn more about what we do, again, go to lifestylesunlimited.com. There's a button there that says free workshop. Hour and a half of your time. Learn more about what we do with single family houses and apartments and start to build your path to financial freedom. I thank you for listening today. You have a great day.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.